Support for this podcast comes from the Fletcher School of Global Affairs at Tufts University. To start your future as a global changemaker, you must have context across fields like international business, cybersecurity, energy policy, and more. Don't just study global affairs, shape them. Visit fletcher.tufts.edu.
This is Radio Boston. I'm Tiziana Deering. A research team at the Broad Institute, a collaboration between Harvard and MIT, has developed a new tool for making changes to DNA. It's called prime editing. Scientists say it's a major advance on the revolutionary gene editing technology called CRISPR, including potentially allowing us to correct the vast majority of mutations that cause genetic diseases. Prime editing was developed in the lab of David Liu, Richard Merkin professor at the Broad Institute and a chemistry professor at Harvard. Professor Liu joins us from Houston, where he's at a conference on the chemistry of genome editing and imaging. David Liu, welcome to Radio Boston.
Thank you for having me.
So, David, have mercy on us everyday people and explain in lay terms this innovation that you've developed. How does it work?
So there are many ways that the DNA letters in each of our cells can change that cause genetic diseases. And we developed a system to try to be able to install or correct as many of these changes as possible. And that system, as you mentioned, is called prime editing. Prime editors are made of two key components, an engineered protein and an engineered RNA molecule, that together orchestrate a series of DNA targeting, DNA writing, and DNA repair steps that result in a true search and replace capability for changing DNA sequences.
So basically, you can go in, find something that you want to change, get rid of the bad, and put in the good kind of all in one fell swoop?
Yeah, that's right. So you can go into a target site in a vast genome that you specify, and you can directly add new DNA letters one at a time to a target site of DNA of your choosing, and in the process replace the original bases, that the original DNA letters that used to be there.
How is this a breakthrough over previous gene editing technology?
Well, so first I just want to make it clear that I think all of the different types of genome editing technologies have complementary strengths and weaknesses. So I think they'll all find important roles in research and in applications such as human therapeutics or agriculture. The original CRISPR-Cas9 genome editing technology is like a pair of molecular scissors that makes cuts in DNA, breaking the double helix into two pieces. And the most common result of cutting DNA is that the cell makes mixtures of insertions and deletions at the cut site. And that can be quite useful if your goal is to disrupt genes. But if your goal is to make precise DNA changes, it can be difficult to do so by cutting the DNA.
Okay, so
prime editing is an example of a technology that doesn't cut DNA in order to make these kinds of changes. We also developed previously another kind of genome editing technology called base editing, which, like prime editing, does not require DNA cutting and can directly make changes to DNA. Base editors can correct four of the most common kinds of point mutations efficiently while avoiding cutting DNA, but base editing can't make some of the other kinds of changes that we can now make with prime editors.
So, David, there are three different kinds of editing technologies you just talked about. It would be, if I'm understanding you correctly, one would not think of them sort of as 1.0, 2.0, and 3.0, and you get rid of the earlier versions. They're variations that allow you to do different things. Is that correct?
That's absolutely correct. So you can think of the original CRISPR-Cas9 as scissors. People have likened base editors to pencils. And you can liken prime editors to word processors capable of searching DNA sequences and precisely replacing them. And just as scissors, pencils, and word processors each have unique and useful roles in our everyday life, I would argue that each of these three different technologies you just mentioned will also have complementary and unique roles.
So great. So give us an example of what might now be possible, like a practical, we could fix X when before we couldn't.
So we showed a couple examples in our paper that just published. One example is that Tay-Sachs disease, it's a well-known genetic disease, is most commonly caused by the insertion of four DNA letters at a certain site in one of your genes called hex A. And we used prime editing to precisely remove those four extra DNA letters, restoring the original sequence of the hex A gene.
So that could essentially eliminate Tay-Sachs.
Well, it's one step in an important series of processes that would need to happen in order to use prime editing to try to treat a genetic disease like Tay-Sachs. But it's important to emphasize that in addition to making the desired change, which is certainly important, we also have to deliver the prime editing machine into the right cells. We have to test its safety and its efficacy in animal models. And so there's a lot of work that has to be done before prime editing can be directly applied to human patients, for example.
David, how would you characterize the very next step in this, given what you've accomplished so far? What's the very next thing you've got to research?
Yeah, so I hope that the researchers in the field now characterize the potential effects of prime editors in cells, try to maximize their compatibility with as many different types of cells as possible, and of course interface them with the various molecular delivery methods that will enable prime editing to work in live animals.
So that you're several steps away from the live animals part.
We're some number of steps away. We're working on using prime editing in live animals, but that will require some additional work. And we've made our constructs encoding all of the prime editing reagents available as of today. So any researcher can go to AdGene, the nonprofit company that is sort of the library of DNA blueprints, and get our prime editing constructs and try the research themselves.
So you've basically made it open source so that other people can be experimenting and doing research with it at the same time, simultaneously.
That's right. The goal is to allow these tools to be used by as many researchers as possible and not to try to keep them secret.
So, I want to step out of the realm of science and into the realm of society for a minute on this. We've talked on the show about CRISPR in the past. Part of that has included discussing the ethical implications. I absolutely get the potential of addressing what something like 89% of genetic diseases with this, with prime editing. At the same time, if I am understanding this correctly, this technology, it may allow you to pretty much insert any edit that you want into genetic code. So is there a moral hazard to be considered here as well, David?
Yeah, at this point, I'm very optimistic about the prospects of using prime editing to do good. As with any technology, genome editing, in theory, could be misused. But I think the barrier to using these tools is high enough that it remains much more practical to surmount those barriers for legitimate purposes. Of course, the scientific community and regulators must continue our efforts to ensure that all editing technologies are implemented in an ethical and responsible manner. And this thoughtful partnership, as you point out, will become increasingly important as genome editing technologies continue to advance in their capabilities and in their application scope.
I'm thinking, for example, of a case in 2017 where a self-titled biohacker named Josiah Zehner injected himself with CRISPR-edited genetic material live on stage at a conference and basically went on to sell a do-it-yourself-at-home CRISPR kit. So I hear you that the threshold for sort of nefarious uses or unethical uses is in many ways higher than the scientific advancements that are exciting and good for humanity. But how should we be thinking about the side-by-side evolution of regulations and ethical frameworks, et cetera, as technology in this area advances so quickly?
Right. I mean, to be clear, I strongly caution against do-it-yourself injection of prime editors or any kind of editing agent. I think such demonstrations and purported applications are irresponsible because they're much more likely to do harm to the individuals just from poor injection techniques, from not knowing exactly what you're injecting, and from not having the kinds of strict quality controls and safety checks that are needed to administer drugs through legitimate ways into patients. So I think, as with any substance, one has to exercise a lot of careful judgment before just deciding to inject it into yourself. So I'm always horrified to hear that some people without proper training or without proper procedures are recommending to others that they inject materials into their bodies that have no such quality safeguards.
So, David, Prime Editing, you've made it, to use a layperson's term, sort of open source so that others can work with it. At the same time, you're co-founder of a number of biotech companies, including Editas Medicine, which is a pharmaceutical company which wants to treat diseases by using therapy based on gene editing technology. You've also got Pairwise Plants, which offers genome editing for agriculture. What will and are the tensions? Biotech is a multi-billion dollar industry. What are the tensions between open sourcing some of these technological advancements and proprietary advancements for profitability in single companies?
Right. That's a great question. It's important to emphasize that while we welcome researchers to use these technologies and try to make them as open source in that regard as possible, that the amount of capital needed to actually bring a new human therapeutic into patients is enormous, far beyond the resources of virtually any academic lab. And therefore, it's really necessary, if patients are to benefit from these technologies, to be able to provide them through paths towards industrialization.
I'm going to have to stop you there, David. I'm sorry. I appreciate that answer. That's David Liu, Richard Merkin Professor at the Broad Institute and a chemistry professor at Harvard. Thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you.
Stay with us. Coming up, we're going to take your calls about filling out financial aid. I'm Tiziana Deering. There's more Radio Boston coming up.